We should probably pray again, maybe. Some sanctification would help. So let's do that. Lord, thank you so much that we get to be a family and joke around, have fun together. And Lord, most importantly, we get to let you do a work in us. So God, I'm asking that your Holy Spirit would be obvious today. That you would give us understanding to your word. Give clarity to this preacher. And Lord, I pray that you'd let our hearts be changed because of your word. And it's through Jesus I pray. Amen. What would make your life better right now? In the back of your bulletin, you have an area there for some notes. Feel free to take some notes. And I want you to do me a favor, write one thing down that you'd say right now, this would make my life better. Now listen, if it's a new spouse, you may not want to write that, okay? Like, do something in code, you know, something like that. Yeah. Let me give you a couple seconds to do that, and those that finish up, if you'd open your Bibles to the Gospel of John, is where we're going to land. What would make your life better right now? Maybe there's some of you, or a couple of you say, my life would be better if I wasn't here right now, or my life would be better if I could get this or that, or... Well, I'm glad that you're here, and we're going to spend some time discovering a little bit more about this. When I was around 10 years old, I wanted hiking boots. And I grew up in a family of nine, and the best that I typically got was hand-me-downs. Anybody with me? Like, hand-me-downs was your life, and, you know, like, by the time it got to you, it already had, like, almost holes in the jeans kind of thing, and you're like, oh, this is going to be good, and 3 days later, maybe you'd have them trashed, and that was my life, but every now and again, I'm not attached to clothing that much, I could care less, and I never did really care if they had holes in it, it's like, whatever, but I wanted this awesome pair of hiking boots, and they had to be, like, this... I'm not sure what you call it, but I guess it's the outside of the leather, not the smooth part, but the other part of leather, you know, that's kind of like fuzzy. You follow me? And it had to be the soles couldn't be the normal, like, flat. It had to be real hiking boots, the good gripping hiking boots that you're gonna go somewhere with these boots. You follow me? And I didn't want them to be the down to your ankle. I wanted them to go up a little bit, like high, what is it? High tops, okay. That's what I wanted for hiking boots. I finally got them. I mean, this is the coolest thing, because I imagine my life to be better with hiking boots. I imagine that I could climb to new heights with hiking boots. I imagine that I could run faster. I could outsmart my brothers. I could do a lot more with brand new hiking boots. Have you been there? Listen, some of you can't relate to this, but some of you can. When I got new shoes, I felt like I was a foot taller, and I felt like I could probably dunk. I did dunk. By the way, I was playing basketball this week, and I dunked the ball this week. I'm just saying. Yep, I did. Ask my cousins. The rim was at 6 feet, but that's okay. I dunked. I finally got these hiking boots, and after I got the hiking boots, I did. I went out, and I could climb things better. I could do things better. Life was absolutely better with hiking boots. The problem was is that I didn't want to get them dirty because that would kind of ruin it. So here's where I hiked, and I remember very distinctly climbing up on the back of our barn, and the barn was, you know, the peak of the roof was probably 20 or 25 feet high. I don't know, something like that. And so I'm climbing on the roof of the barn. That was absolutely acceptable with my parents. They didn't care that much. We did all kinds of fun things in our yard. We helped to build this barn. So for me to climb on it, I helped to roof it. And I was 10 or so. But I was up on there, halfway up, sitting there thinking, as I looked up into the heavens, thinking, the Lord could come back right now. Is this a weird thought for a 10-year-old? Yeah. Did I tell you that God called me into ministry when I was around 9? Okay, so God was a big part of my life, and I'm sitting there thinking, God could come back right now. And if he did, I would not get to use these boots. So I prayed. I distinctly remember praying, Lord, Lord, if you're planning to come back right now, can you just postpone a little bit so I can enjoy the boots? I literally prayed that. Is that the weirdest prayer or what? Because at that moment, I just thought my life was the best it could ever be. It was better than before. It was better than tomorrow. It was better than heaven even. I was messed up, I know. But then I found out. See, I'm really hard on my shoes. I have to buy really nice shoes. Not the fancy shoes, but the expensive, well-built shoes, because I'm really bad on my shoes still. My shoes lasted 3 to 6 months. That was normal for me. I would run through the soles of them. I would put duct tape around them to hold them together for a while longer because I ran through shoes. These shoes, they didn't last. The soles came off of them, literally. I remember going out in my dad's workshop finding the best, absolute best glue. And we didn't have Gorilla Glue back then, but I found the best glue. And I glued them back together, and they lasted for like one more play time. And I glued them together again, and they didn't last. Have you had those experiences where you said in your mind, and maybe at the top of your paper, you've written something down that you're like, man, I want hiking boots like that, and my life will be better if I can get that. But here's the reality. I hate to break it to you. Now, I hate to disappoint you, but here's what's going to happen. In most cases, they break. Something happens. So here's what I've discovered. In order to have something that I can absolutely say, this will be better. In order to have that, here's what I need to have. I have to have something that is eternal. Something that is going to last forever. Something that never falls apart. Something that will provide me joy forever and ever and ever and ever and ever some more. Something that's just... it's everything. What's better than everything? A new car? What's better than everything? A new hairdo? New clothes? Eagles in the Super Bowl. What is better than everything? Here's your Sunday school answer. You ready? You ready? Do you have it? Church, you know what I'm going to say, right? I have to say this. Some of you don't believe this. Some of you are really skeptical about this. Some of you are like, oh, here we go. He's paid to say this next thought. Jesus is better than everything. Jesus is better than everything. Did you catch that yet? He says that he came to give life, and not just to give life, but to give it abundantly. Jesus is better than everything. How in the world can I say that? And here's the one word that in this series you're going to hear repeatedly. He is glorious. He is absolutely amazing and glorious. He is above all. He is beyond every imaginable thing that you can ever expect to have. Anything that you think, well, this is better if I could just have a better relationship, if I could have better finances, and if I could just have a better day, if I could have a better car, whatever. All of that, you take it all and put it into one pile. He's better than all of that. Why? In the very beginning, you see how glorious he is in that he creates mankind and he puts them into this garden. There's no better place than the garden on earth because there's no sin there. And then they decide to run against God. And Paul describes that in Romans 3:23. He says, for all have sinned, just like Adam and Eve did, and they fall short of what? the glory of God. Isn't that incredible? They fall short of the one thing that is the most significant thing, the glory of God. As the glory of God shows up, people actually fall on their face before God in several parts of the Bible. The glory of God is something that is absolutely huge in that he is so glorious in that he created the whole earth. Psalm 19, we started with this. The heavens declare what? How glorious he is. It declares he is absolutely, amazingly glorious. Do you see it? He is so glorious in that what happens is when we destroyed the earth by sinning against him and going our own direction, he's so glorious in that he sent his one and only son to die on the cross so that, and as Jesus stated it several times, I didn't come for my glory, but for your glory. He declares his glory even by sending his one and only son, Jesus Christ. He is better than everything. Did you catch it yet? That's so hard to put into regular life. Is it better than... Listen, if my feelings got hurt really easy, Mrs. Angerstein would have had me crying this morning. Could you imagine this? If she would have said to me, you know, Pastor, it's just not the best. I think you could do better. Could you see me at the back door as you came in? She hurt my feelings. Oh, my day is ruined. Could you see that? I couldn't either. Jesus is better than acceptance. But we all struggle with that, don't we? He's better than everything. In John chapter 2, it's a fascinating passage because we see the glory of God first mentioned as Jesus is there on this earth doing something amazing. So if you haven't gotten there yet, turn to John chapter 2. John chapter 2. Some of you, I'm going to say it again, are not with me yet. Some of you are sitting there and saying, Jesus is not better than everything. I get that, like, whatever, just keep going, preacher, whatever, just get this thing done because I got things to do. Some of you are going through some experiences right now or have gone through experiences where you're saying, I get that, and I grew up doing the Sunday school thing, or I went to church, and I get all of this, and yeah, I understand that Jesus is better than everything. I know that you're going to say that, but let me tell you, if Jesus is better than everything, then why did my life turn out the way it's going? Why are things so bad and miserable in my life? I'm just being honest, okay? Because I know that that's where we really are, many or some, a few, I'm not sure. And at different parts of our life, we're going to struggle with this statement. Because when you can't pay your bills and the electric's out and you're the kind of the laugh of people because you can't keep things together, you say, but I go to church, I do the Jesus thing, and I prayed and I asked him to provide and take care of this, and it becomes challenging at times to say this and believe it. Jesus is better than everything. John chapter 2, a fascinating thing that's going to... I fully expect that some of you are not going to be thrilled about this message for a few different reasons. So just kind of bear with me as we go through this. John chapter 2 and verse 1. On the third day, there was a wedding at Cana in Galilee. And the mother of Jesus was there. Now stop there. Here's how they did weddings back then. This was not a simple affair like we have today. Wedding today would be simpler in that we would have a wedding ceremony and then we go off typically to another area where we have the reception and we celebrate together. In that time, this would not go for a one-day period, but this would often go for an entire week. Okay? Could you imagine how fun that would be? At least a weekend. So you'd celebrate, and the whole town would come together to celebrate this couple getting married. It'd be exciting times for the whole town as this new couple gets married. So Jesus, in verse 2, also was invited to the wedding with his disciples. And this would be the first time that we see Jesus and his disciples hanging out together in a particular location. And so, in verse 3 is interesting. When the wine ran out. Now, this is where I'm going to irritate some. Some, and I grew up with this huge debate as to whether this is wine or juice. Okay? Some people say, it can't be wine because here's what is happening. If it's wine, then Jesus is actually endorsing or allowing or enabling drinking and / drunkenness. So is he enabling sinfulness? And so by that argument, some would say it can't be wine, it must be juice. But in the grammatical and historical context, you'd say no one brings juice to a wedding. And grammatically, it's always interpreted wine. So that's challenging. So there's the tension in the text. If you want to believe grape juice, you go right ahead. Or any kind of juice, cranberry, orange, whatever, like you think it might be, you go ahead. But I believe this is actually wine, and here's why. When the wine ran out, what happened? Now, think about this. You go to a party, or you go to the wedding, and the bar, halfway through the reception, the bartender says, "Closed, I got water." Listen, pretend you're not in church, and we don't talk about this, right, in church. But let's just be real for a second. What happens to the crowd? Yeah, it's like, can you believe that? Somebody didn't pay the bill. You know, this is so lame. I got to go find a new watering hole, you know. I this is enough. I can't do this here. And the reception goes from the intended time frame to it gets cut way down. Now, that's just to be real. So here's what happens. I love this. This is so fascinating to me. When the wine ran out, who comes to the scene? The mother of Jesus. Mary has something to say. So what does she do? She says to Jesus, "They have no wine." She's concerned about this, and some would say she's probably the host, or she's in charge or responsible for an area, or it's a close friend. We're really not sure why she's saying something, but she's saying something, and maybe she just cares, and hey, they ran out of wine. But here's why people think she was kind of in charge or something like that, because Jesus says back to her, "Woman," I've never responded to my mom that way. Like, not in seriousness. And I think, like, "Connor, please don't ever do this to your mother. This would be a bad day for you." Even sarcasm, you just don't say this to mom. "Hey, woman." I'm just saying, this is really interesting. "Woman, what does this have to do with me?" "My hour has not yet come." When you find the hour, you find at the end of the Gospels, right before Jesus gives his life, it's a glorious hour where his glory is revealed then in that what he is about to do. It shows how he truly and certainly is God. But he says, "My hour is not yet come. It's not time for me to reveal myself to the world." Does she know who Jesus is? Absolutely. Verse 5 is interesting because they don't have a big dialogue. This is how you end an argument. Okay? Here's what Mary does. She turns to the servants and says to them, "Do whatever he tells you." Like, And maybe there's more to the conversation than this. But this is just how I see it working out. Mary says, we're out of wine. Jesus says, woman, what does that have to do with me? And he turns to the servants. He says, just do whatever he tells you to do. It's Jesus. You're going to fix it. I don't care what you have to say about it. You're going to do this because I'm your mom. That's just kind of how I get it. Now, Mary was relying on Jesus to get her out of a bad situation. Did you catch that? Have you ever relied on Jesus to get you out of a bad situation? That's what she's doing. But let me just take it a little further, and this might touch a little deeper. Having everything go right and according to plan was better than everything. Have you ever been there? The OCD people that you have to have, everything's got to be together. And I know, you came in and you're like, oh, there's something new going to happen today. What's the something new? And it's really going to mess my whole day up. And then you walk in and it's this. How could they? It's not folding. I can't believe it. You know, when life doesn't go the way that you expect or plan, does it totally mess your life up? Does it totally mess your day up? When your hair is not right, there's a habit. When your clothes aren't done right, or you get a stain on your clothes, or when finances aren't working out quite right, you get an extra bill or something breaks. Listen, are we more interested in everything going as we plan for it to go? Is that the what's better than everything? Here's how I can test you. When things go wrong, what do you do? What's the first thing you do when things don't go right? You should. I'm glad somebody does. Yeah, okay, we're complaining. Okay, good. All right. We're being honest here today. What else do we do? Get angry. Nag. What is this over here? Get aggravated. We try to fix it. We go to work. What's that? A what?
Rage quit.
A rage quit? We do all kinds of things, right? Where you get upset and you say, that's it, I'm not doing anything anymore. You get angry with people. You drive someone else to fix it. You do all kinds of things when things aren't going well in your life or something's just out of order. Because that's better than everything to a lot of us. I have my plan, and God, by the way, you are not allowed to mess with it. That's the agreement we have. But Jesus is better than everything. For guests, having an open bar was better than everything at this wedding. So in verse 6 then, now there were 6 stone water jars there for the Jewish rites of purification, each holding 20 or 30 gallons. Let's do the math. 6 jars, and you have 20 or 30 gallons. How many gallons is that? Wow. 122. Okay, so it's a lot. Okay? Think about 120, 130, 150. Just start with the smallest, 120 gallons of water. That's a lot of water. Okay? That's quite the party we have going on. I'm just saying. Jesus said to the servants, fill the jars with water. And they filled them up to the brim. And he said to them, now draw some out and take it to the master of the feast. Here's what they're doing. He's telling them, after you have this all done, I want you to draw some out, and you need to take it to the person that's absolutely in charge and have them do a taste test of this, because they are the ones that have to make sure that everything is going well at the feast here. So they took it. Verse 9, when the master of the feast tasted the water, now become wine, and did not know where it came from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew, the master of the feast called the bridegroom, and he said to him, everyone serves the good wine first, and when people have drunk freely, then the poor wine. But you have kept the good wine until now. Now stop. You understand why, correct? Your senses kind of go downhill after a bit, okay? If it's juice, would that be a problem? Okay, now, so he says, there's an issue in that you save the best for last. This was the absolute, how do you get wine to be good? You have Jesus make it, okay? Good. We don't do this in church, so I understand. You're like, I don't know, I'll YouTube it and figure it out. And here's how the phrase goes. Wine is better over time, okay? Why? Because it seems like, and I wouldn't know because I'm not a wine person. I might wine once in a while, but I'm not, okay. So here's the reality. Over time, wine gets better, and it ages, and if it's stored properly, it becomes that much better, okay? Those that understand this, and if you're curious, you can YouTube it or Google it or whatever. Now, here's why I think it's wine. Because God could take water and surpass the process it takes to become wine, aged and good and awesome wine. He can surpass all of that. Listen, let's just kind of stop here for a second. If I want to make lemonade, how am I making lemonade? Here's how I make lemonade. I go and get this jar thing, this like cardboard container that has a mix in it. Okay? I don't go get lemons. I get the mix. And here's what I do. If I were in that time and we were making lemonade, here's what I would do, right? Hey, guys. Hey, look at the bird. And I would be dumping it in. Take the whole container and dump it in. Hey, go take this and stir it up first, you know, and get the good stuff at the bottom, you know, and take it over to the... Here's what Jesus did. And look, I'm not making light of this. I'm actually making this important and significant because it is. Jesus is fully God in that he can take water that's purified, water that's clean, and he can turn that into wine. Aged, tasting wonderful in the moment. Jesus is better than everything. That's my point. Let me keep going, I'll come back then. Here's why. You go down to verse 11, and something significant is said here. This, the first of his signs, so this is the first miracle that Jesus does. Jesus did at Cana in Galilee. Why? Check this next phrase out. And manifested his glory, and his disciples believed in him. Here's what he's doing. I want to show you how glorious I am. I want to show you how significant I am. I want to show you that I have more power than anyone to change water into wine. And the one that's doing the taste test is objective. He has nothing. He's not slipping him a 20 and say, hey, say it tastes good. Let me illustrate. I bought this, and when I brought it out to the car, my wife didn't know I bought this, and it was not for her. I bought it for today's illustration. But I might need to buy this for her after this. But do you know what she said? I didn't pay her to say this. This was interesting. She said, what you got there? Something like that. Why? This is a glorious flower. It's a beautiful rose. I did not arrange it. It even has, guys, this is really good stuff. A guy didn't make this, I'm sure. But it has a ribbon on it to bring more attention to this glorious flower. It's so great. When you see it up close and you smell it, you can just get that much more. You're like, wow, this is awesome. The glory of the flower and how wonderful it is. And And we would say, God created this. He made this. He fashioned and formed this to just show, hey, look, this is great. If you want to get out of trouble with your wife, this is a great thing to do. It doesn't change how messed up you are, but it helps her to gloss over it a little bit better. You follow me? It has a lot of good attributes to it, good things you can do with it. It makes your house look better. It makes all kinds of things look better if you just, me holding it makes me look better. Do you follow me? No. Here's my point. If I were to talk about flowers and say flowers are just glorious, some of you would have enough of imagination to be able to say, yeah, I get it. They are. They're neat. But some of you are like, oh, yeah. And if I talked to my wife about buying her some flowers and oh, how nice they were, and we went to the flower show or anything like that, it's one thing to talk about it, but it's something totally different when you bring it up close. It has a different impact to it. You see, here's what's going on. Jesus is absolutely, he's better than everything. So much so that he said it to his disciples. They're kind of like, yeah, I kind of get this. We're going to drop everything and follow him because at least he's interesting to hang out with. But then when he changes water into wine and they watch it right in front of them to manifest his glory, to show him right up front, I am glorious. I am God in the flesh. That's who I am. It's right there in front of them. They make a choice and believe. Is transformational in that they see the glory of God and how significant he is, and then they are changed by it. Why? Because it's right there. It's not simply on a page, but it's right there. Now, oftentimes our better than list, our it would be better, has everything to do with wine. My agenda in this whole series is to encourage and help you understand that Jesus is better than everything. Can we talk about water for a second? It's interesting how the Gospel of John has several parts of this that are devoted to water. When you go all the way back to the book of Genesis, do you know in creation, you should read Genesis chapter 1 again. How many days does he talk about the change of water? It's fascinating. And how he reorganizes and resituates water. It's absolutely amazing. He split the water apart. He forms the dry land and sea. He pulls them apart. He's more powerful than water. The anniversary of the superstorm Sandy was just a little bit ago. And do you remember what damage water caused? God's more powerful than water. He's so powerful that he can take a sea that's just huge and flowing, and he can take it and he can dry it up and split it apart so that the Israelites can walk across it and use that as a testimony to the next generation and say, remember when he opened this up for us to walk through. How? On dry land. He is not simply powerful enough to open it up, but he is so powerful that he dries it. He instantly pulls in the evaporation process and makes it so that it's dry for them to walk through. That's how great God is. He is so great that he can send the wind, and the water does what it does, and it becomes this huge storm for Jonah to be dumped into, and then he calms it instantly when Jonah is in there for the people to survive it. It's fascinating how powerful he is to control the water. You find him here, and he's changing water and reconfiguring or retasting it into what is amazing, into wine. You can see this all the way through. Matter of fact, in the next chapter, or two chapters later, he's talking to a woman at a well, and he says that he is the living what? Water. The very last act that he does on earth in human form, he was already dead. And know what happens? Instead of doing what they typically did, when they crucify an individual, they break their legs and they make them suffocate and die there. They ensure that the person is totally dead. Instead of that, they took and they pierced him. And what comes out? Water and blood. Identifying, even water, identifying that as it's coming out, that he truly gave his life. The living water. Do you catch that? What symbolism? Altogether, he's glorious. Now, because Jesus is better than everything, we should do everything to bring him glory. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 31, it says, "Whether therefore you eat or drink, no matter what you do, do all to the glory of God." Listen, no matter what you're doing, do everything to the glory of God. What does that look like? How do you do that? Like, I kind of get that a little bit. So how do you do the making God glorious? Do all to the glory of God. You ready? This beautiful rose is glorious all on its own. Now, let's change this. How beautiful is that rose to you now? It changes everything when it's in front of you. It changes everything when you put it on a pedestal. When you put it up for all to see, it changes everything. It becomes that much more glorious in a sense. Not that it is, but it just becomes, wow, this is awesome. This is significant. We essentially, by doing all to the glory of God, here's what we become. We become the pedestal for the glory of God. We are holding up, we are showing for everyone, we are displaying the glory of God in everything that we are doing. You see, this is the better life. So, when we're in a bad situation, we're thinking, what would put Jesus on a pedestal? Instead of focusing on the bad situation, we're turning and we're saying, okay, the life that I'm going through and the experience and the things that I'm going through right at this moment are unpleasant to me. But could God be using this to show how glorious he is? Do you see it? Could God be using this in your life to demonstrate how great he is? Go back with me. We talked about this last year, the man Joseph. Do you remember Joseph? At the end of Genesis, here's Joseph who's born from Jacob, and he's the best, most favorite son. And in his life, he has the opportunity just to be able to blossom and be everything and awesome at 17 years old. And he thought the glory is about him. And then what happens is his brothers hate him. They sell him into slavery. He goes through years of pain in prison, lied about, and all kinds of things happen to him. It was a horrendous, a horrible, horrible life to live for those years. And we'll say it's about 13 to 20 years time frame that he's living this horrible life. From 17 years old to about 37 years old, he's going through all this pain. Now, he comes back to his brothers. His brothers had every intention to have him killed. That was the goal. Let's wipe him off the planet because we don't care for him so much. And we come back in Genesis chapter 50. It's fascinating what Joseph does. As they come and dad dies and they fear for their own life, they're begging basically for their life. And he says to them, absolutely frustrated, with tears running down his cheek, crying and just saying, guys, you're not getting this, you're not getting this. What you meant for evil, God meant for good. Why? To bring about his glory through my life, through the circumstances I'm going through, and absolutely I am just fine with putting him on the pedestal. If that's what my life is about, then wow, that's awesome. I'll be the pedestal and he gets the glory. Because Jesus is better than everything, do everything to bring him glory. So when we get up, when we eat lunch, when we go to work, when we talk to people, when we pay our bills, when we get our paycheck, etc., 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 we put Jesus on a pedestal. When someone ticks you off, you're putting Jesus on a pedestal. When someone questions you, we're putting Jesus on a pedestal. When someone robs you, we're putting Jesus on a pedestal. Everything that goes on in our life, do all to the glory of God. Do everything to put God on a pedestal. Because he is better than everything. Too often, and here's the rub. Too often. Here's what we do with Jesus. You ready? We put Jesus behind the pedestal. Our focal point in our life is all about us. And can I just question Mary for a second? And the guests? And the master of the feast and the bridegroom, wouldn't it appear like all of those are essentially more concerned about the pedestal, the party, and how life was going, and how people would think about them, and all this, this circumstance cannot go this way, and couldn't, I mean, I'm just speculating a little bit, but I can't totally judge their motives, and nor could I judge yours, but you could actually look at your own. And the things that you're frustrated and angry and irritated about, are you saying, God, you see, I'm going to control the outcome of my life and I'm going to control how things are absolutely supposed to go because they're supposed to go this way so that my pedestal can look so great. It's really funny. Do a Google search of pedestals. You don't see glorious pedestals. I mean, they're nice. If I came home and say I did something really bad with my wife, you know, I really got in trouble. And if I came home and I said, honey, honey, I got you something. I just want to give you this pedestal. She would take the thing. Yeah, we'll just stop there. But if I brought a flower home, that would change things. Church, can I just encourage you, as you're going through life, a normal life, could you be the pedestal for Jesus instead of making your life about the pedestal? That's what it is to do all to the glory of God. If you're in a wrecked marriage, if you're in a wrecked job, no matter what you're in, it's God. I want to give you glory in how I'm acting, how I'm talking, everything that my being is just putting out. I want you to be on the pedestal. So help me, Lord, to do that. Help me to respond correctly instead of being angry, frustrated, agitated, and all these other things that I typically am. Lord, I want you to be on the pedestal because all those other isms and all those other reactions, they're all about me. It's all about me trying to make things better. Instead of putting you on the pedestal. It's basically saying, I'm on the throne, and I'm what's really right, and I can't be offended, and I can't be irritated. I must get my way, so therefore, if I don't, I'm going to just let it out. We're hiding this. We're hiding Jesus behind us. Put him up on the pedestal. Do all to the glory of God. Why? Because Jesus is everything. Now, listen, I know. If you're like, yeah, but Jesus isn't everything to me. Then you're going to look at this and say, this is the most narcissistic statement you could say about Jesus. That all he cares about is himself. I know. But what if it's the best statement? And maybe if that's where you are, maybe we could have a conversation one-on-one. Maybe we could bring it up at a different time and really explore that. Because that's one of the things I've been challenged with this whole series. The glory of God, is it narcissistic even? We'll develop that out over time. For this week, Can I encourage you to look for every possible way to put Jesus on the pedestal of your life? Let him be glorious because he is. Let's pray. Lord, thank you so much for all that you've done and all that you will do. Thank you, Lord, for being so glorious. Thank you for just how amazing you are in so many different ways. The fact that you're not done with us, the fact that you tolerate us, the fact that you continue to provide and care for and love on us. God, we just thank you. May you get glory for this time. It's through Jesus I pray. Amen. Over, I want to do something. And as a reminder, each week I'm going to bring some flowers in. And each week I'm going to give flowers away. But this week I thought, I'm going to give the one rose to my one and only love, to my wife. Because I love her. Go ahead.